The Lord be with you.
A
reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. And Jesus said to the Jewish people, "My Father is at work until now, so I am at work. For this reason, they tried to kill me all the more, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but he also called God his Father, making him equal to God." But Jesus went on to say, "I say to you, the Son cannot do anything on his own, but only what he sees the Father doing. For what he does, the Father will also do. The Son will do the same. For the Father loves the Son and shows him everything that he himself does, and he will show him greater works than these, so that you may be amazed." The Gospel of the Lord. I think St. Patrick deserves just a few minutes of comment here today. Patrick was a citizen of the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire in the time of Patrick, the 5th century, was falling apart. It was going through the collapse, but still it had already conquered present-day England. And therefore Patrick lived there in probably what we call Wales today. When he was a young boy, 16 years old, he was captured by Irish raiders. Very primitive, warlike raiders from Ireland. They captured him and many, many others and brought them to Ireland as slaves. Most of what we know about Patrick comes from two documents that he left. One, the Confessions, his Confessions, and the second, a letter to a fellow called Caroticus, who was abusing some of his servants or slaves. That's what we know about Patrick. So he talks about coming to Ireland as a young boy, about 16 years old, and he was kept in slavery for about 6 years. Then he goes on to tell us how he had this vision, this dream, and he prayed and prayed. He wasn't very religious when he was captured as a slave. His father, though, a fellow called Copernicus, he was a deacon. And his grandfather, a fellow called Potitus was a Catholic priest. In those days, priests got married. So comes to Ireland as a boy, and he becomes very religious because he is a slave and he is going through a very difficult time. And eventually, after about 6 or 7 years, he hears a voice. The voice of God speaks to him and says, "Time to go home." And eventually, he goes home. And but he keeps hearing the voices of the people of Ireland, "Come back to us." So he goes into Europe, becomes a priest, a bishop, and the Pope Celestine at the time sends him to Ireland in the year 432. Now he will begin to evangelize Ireland. What's interesting about Patrick, first, is that we had great minds in the church about that time. I mean, St. Augustine the Great died in the year 430. He's a contemporary of Patrick, and he was a great intellectual. Patrick was not. He lost his education because of his slavery. That's when he would have developed a literary competency. Therefore, his Latin was poor. And scholars will tell us that in his Confessions and in his letter to Caroticus, his Latin is not very good, but it's very clear. So he had this extraordinary ability to integrate into the Irish culture. He didn't go in and condemn everything, and he didn't try to drive out snakes or demons. He became part of the Irish culture, and because he somehow found himself ingratiated with the people, At the time, there were no cities, and therefore the ruling class were local kings, families that controlled large pieces of Ireland. But he found a hospitality with the kings and with the important people, and he began his evangelization. He died in Ireland. Now, we don't know what year, all sorts of fantasy about which year it was, but he died in Ireland. He's buried somewhere in Ireland. There's a tradition he's at Donpatrick, but that's a tradition. In any case, the good thing about Patrick is that he didn't condemn. There were only two things that he really fought against. One was child sacrifice, human sacrifice. In very primitive Ireland now, human sacrifice was part of the culture. They had many false gods there. And the second thing was slavery. They were the two things that he fought against. Otherwise, he didn't really try to banish any of the other practices. And there were many very peculiar practices. It was an agricultural people, and therefore they had all sorts of gods related to the seasons, related to an agricultural life. But he somehow he wasn't rigid. He was understanding, and he was patient with the culture. It's a great lesson for us, you know, that somehow when we enter into another culture, or we're looking at an emerging reality, to somehow not be too severe, not to be too judgmental about everything that comes up in the life of the church or the Christianity, whatever, but to somehow find a friendship, a sense of understanding, a sense of belonging. That's very much patrician. Now, after he has set the roots of Christianity in Ireland, there will emerge a huge monastic movement. Because there were no cities, the monasteries became the center of culture and learning and human development. Monasteries were the center. Bishops, nobody cared about bishops. Abbots and abbesses were very important. And finally, along comes Bridget of Kildare. She was an abbess, and she was a convert of Patrick's. And she was an extraordinary person in Irish history, because being an abbess of a very large abbey, not far from Dublin, a place called Kildare, and Bridget, this abbey had men and women, and she was in charge of the whole lot. It's interesting, you know, when you look back. And she was very powerful. Now, there are all sorts of things written about Bridget. She certainly appointed bishops. She selected Mel, the Bishop of Wicklow, that's for sure. But she was very powerful. And some say that she was ordained a bishop herself. We don't know that for sure. But she certainly had the authority of a priest. And she led liturgies. I mean, it's an amazing thing about Bridget. I like Bridget because my mother's name was Bridget. But it's an extraordinary development of Christianity. And now they don't care about Rome. They don't know anything about Rome. They won't contact Rome for another 100 years. And whatever happens in Ireland is very indigenous. The church grows in Ireland. The monastic church will grow in Ireland. They're not in contact with Rome. It's a de-Romanized church, and it flourishes in a monastic tradition. Only later, the 7th century, maybe the end of the 6th century, they will begin to evangelize Europe. Monastic people begin to evangelize, and they will run into bishops, and there will be a big controversy, and eventually king in Northumberland makes this big judgment that Rome should be the authority. And then the Irish monks submit to that, and begins a whole new development of the church, or Christianity in Europe. But there was a time when the monastic de-Romanized church flourished in Ireland for maybe 150, 200 years, where they don't know anything about Rome. They're not connected with Rome. But anyway, Patrick left some kind of an extraordinary tradition, not only a tradition of the faith in Ireland, but a tradition of missionary evangelization. That goes back to post-patrician times with the monks. And ever since then, the Irish have sent missionaries all over the world. Now, I've traveled 7 continents. I've been all over the world a number of times. And everywhere I went to Thailand, I was in China, I was in places in Africa, South America, down in Papua New Guinea, in Australia, Irish missionaries were everywhere. Everywhere I met, Irish fellows born in Ireland, they were all everywhere I went. I found Irish missionaries. It's an amazing thing. The Philippines, we have many people here from the Philippines. The Irish are very, very strong in the Philippines. Patrick launched a sense of missionary endeavor through the monastic movement that endured up to very, very recent times. Right now, everything has changed now, of course, and we don't have many missionaries coming out of Ireland, but for a long time, the power of Irish missionary life was extraordinary all over the world. So it's a good thing for us to remember this as we celebrate the Feast of Patrick.